Okay. Good evening. I want to thank all of you for coming. I decided to talk about a topic that I thought would be interesting, and I hope you won't disagree. And it's sort of connected to last week's parasha. You see, last week was Parashas Chayisara, and according to tradition, Parashas Chayisara is the parasha where everyone talks about shidduchim and what to look for in a marriage partner and stuff like that. I have to admit, I have a show that probably has the highest percentage of singles in the entire country. It's called Mount Sinai Jewish Center in Washington Heights, and I never talk about shidduchim just because it's too sensitive, and there's really no way of saying anything that will come across well, so I try not to say anything. However, I figured I may as well talk about it here, because why not? I hope that it does not come across terribly, and I guess you'll be the judges of that as we go on. So Parashas Chayisara is a parasha of shidduchim, and one of the biggest questions that comes up with respect to shidduchim is, am I allowed to lie in the process of shidduchim? Now, some of the questions that come up in terms of lying, again, it's not particularly relevant, I guess, in this age group, but sometimes people have certain arbitrary cutoffs. I will not go out with someone who is over the age of 25, over the age of 30, over the age of 40, something like that. Are you allowed to lie? Are you allowed to say, oh, yeah, 38? Been 38 for the last 16 years. 38. I'm still 38. Are you allowed to lie in that situation and distort whether or not, distort the facts, say that I'm really not that age? Is it permitted to lie? So some people bring a raya from the psukim in this past week's parasha, no? This is not on the star sheets yet, but we know that Eliezer goes to make a shidduch for Yitzchak, and he eventually marries a young woman named Rivka. She was quite young, according to some traditions. According to other traditions, she wasn't that young. She was really 14. Oh, that's much better. But the fact is, when you go through the psukim, so what's going on is we see all these differences between the way Avram tells Eliezer, between what actually happened, and between what Eliezer reports to Lavan and Bethuel, no? How are you allowed to do that? Right? How is Eliezer allowed to tamper with the facts? Isn't that called lying? So some suggest, well, you know what? Maybe for shidduchim, you're allowed to lie. And that's the proof that they bring. It's a proof from the Torah. It's not bad, no? Not bad. Does anyone want to refute this? The refutation, I think, is kind of easy. You see, we don't work in a realm where God is like directing every one of our actions, generally. You know, if you are someone like, even Eliezer Eben Avram is quite the holy whatever he is, and he's probably not Jewish, right? By whatever he is, I mean he's somewhere between Jewish and non-Jewish, and presumably you can't really bring a raya. Additionally, the lies that are told in terms of the sequence of events, it's not really a lie. See, there's a difference between saying someone is 38 when the person is really 41. And right, that's a lie. That's not correct. And kind of hiding some information is not really a lie. Correct? So I think that is one issue. The story goes, I presume that most of you don't speak Yiddish, but if you would speak Yiddish, this joke would be really funny. So the story goes like this. There's a fellow who is training to learn how to be a shadchan. So obviously, you're an apprentice. You want to learn how to be a professional shadchan. So you go to the real pro and you ask, how do I go about becoming an expert shadchan? So the pro tells him or her, the pro says, it's not so hard. Whatever I say, you exaggerate a bit. Okay, not so difficult. So, the first opportunity, they walk over to, obviously shidduchim in that world are operating with parents, no? In our world, generally speaking, shidduchim operate with some combination of parents and the people themselves or just the people themselves. This is actually one of the more difficult issues to try to figure out based on what world you're in terms of how the Shidduchim operates. But the story of the Shadchan's apprentice is that the Shadchan's apprentice goes on the first mission, so to speak, and he sees that the Shadchan walks over to a fellow and says, "You know what? I have a young woman, and she's really wonderful. She comes from a wealthy family." So Shadchan's apprentice says, "Oh," that light bulb goes off in the head. "Oh, wealthy, not just wealthy. I'm telling you, like wealthy like Bernie Madoff. Maybe that's not so good. Wealthy like Rothschild. Wealthy like Korach. Like really wealthy. Okay, not bad." Like, next thing, by the way, this fellow, he's extremely handsome. He's just gorgeous. Oh, well, handsome. Oh. So the Shadchan's apprentice begins saying, "Not just handsome. This guy, he's like a Michelangelo sculpture. Not bad, right? The guy's really, you know, he's building. He looks like something that's crafted in stone." Okay, the Shadchan's apprentice, he's beginning to get it right. Finally, the professional Shadchan says, "I have one little problem with this young woman that we're trying to set up. The little problem is, Zihata Kleiner Haigerol. She has a tiny little hunchback." So Shadchan's apprentice says, "A Kleiner Haigerol. Zihata Haiger via Berg. You get it? No. A little hunchback. You have a hunchback the size of a mountain." Now, the problem with this story is, first of all, it's accurate on a certain level that Shadchanim always distort. Second of all, not only is it accurate that Shadchanim distort, but distorting is really lying. No? On a certain level, there's a difference between not telling the entire truth and actually distorting. If I say that someone is genuinely wealthy or someone is genuinely intelligent and the person isn't, that's a lie, and that would be, presumably, a problem throughout Torah, which is something that we'll look into for a few moments. So the question about lying in Shidduchim is really a very real question, but I have to admit, in our world, and our world I don't know who at all, there's one of you I know here, but I'm assuming that in the general modern Orthodox, centrist Orthodox world, so there are certain things that are just not lied about in Shidduchim. My wife tells me, my wife is an assistant principal now in SAR High School, just to put it in context, but she grew up in the more yeshivish black cat world in Brooklyn, etc. And for a while she was going out with Lakewood guys, and then she went out with one YU guy and she got stuck with him. That's what it is. Now, she told me that, like, when she was going with Lakewood guys, and they would tell you that the guy is 5'9", the guy would show up and he's 5'9", wearing three pairs of elevator shoes. That's a lie! And that is not particularly uncommon, at least based on my massive survey of one from my wife. That was not so uncommon when she was dating in the Lakewood world. She said the best thing about dating in the YU world is, they say a guy's 5'9", he'll show up, he's actually 5'9". Oh, now we can talk, right? The question of lying in Shidduchim is a very real question. So let's try to go through some of the sources together in terms of lying in general, and then we'll plug it into Shidduchim. Is it mutter to lie? Are you allowed to lie? Parshas Toldos. Anochi Esav b'chorecha. Right? So everyone begins to like scratch their head and spit wooden nickels and say, like, what are you talking about? You know, it's Yaakov Avinu, he's lying. This doesn't sound like what they taught us in grade school. But is lying permitted? So there's a pasuk in the Torah. Torah writes, Midvar Sheker Tirchok, V'noki V'tzadik Al Taro, V'latzik Rosha. Now, Tirchok means stay far away from it. Apparently, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling us that not only should you avoid lies, but you should keep a real distance from it. But in the context, the Torah says, don't lie, midrash eka tirchak, and don't kill innocent people, and don't take bribery. So presumably, who's the Torah speaking to? Who would be likely to take bribery? Who would be likely to kill innocent people?
Judges.
A judge, a dayan. That's in Parshas Mishpatim, by the way, which a good chunk of it, at least, deals with Dayanim. And Ibn Ezra writes, Mitva Sheker im Hadayim Yidaber Shalom Yodim Din Sheker. Right? So the Pashtus in the Torah, the simple meaning of the Pasuk is that the Issa Mitva Sheker Tirchak is formulated about a dayan. The Sefer Yireim, Sefer Yireim Ibn Ezra of Met, he was a Baal HaTosfos, a student of the Rabbeinu Tam, who was also exposed to the German school. The only way to really get the Rabbeinu Tam's shitos not filtered through the pens of the other Baal HaTosfos, Rabbeinu Tam, the way Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik says it, is that Rabbeinu Tam was a brilliant genius, but he didn't write very well. So Rabbeinu Tam's positions, if you read like the Sefer HaYosher for Rabbeinu Tam, it's like half a sentence, you have no idea what's going on. You read the Tosfos, so then the Tosfos already starts to make sense, because the Tosfos is written by the Ri, it's written by the Rabbeinu Baruch, it's written by other Talmidim of the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam didn't write very well. The only way to get the positions of the Rabbeinu Tam, not through the Baal HaTosfos directly, is through the Yireim. The Yireim does not say, like the Ibn Ezra, that Midrash Sheker Tirchak is only speaking about a dayan, but nonetheless, the Yireim seriously limits the Isser of lying. The Yireim writes, by the way, if you are interested in this topic about when you're allowed to lie and not, there is a sefer that came out in the late 80s called Titin Emes L'Yakov that literally has 115 kulas about when you're allowed to lie. The whole book is about lying, and it has all the kulas. This is, for some reason, in YU, this sefer is on the Musar shelf in the base medrash. It seems to me that this is like the least Musardic sefer on the planet. But, okay, what can you do? Now, the Sefer Yireim writes, Sheker she'eno bo midei ra'a lo hizhira Torah alav. V'dara lami me'inyano she'berosh ra'a l'priyas ha'kasim bat medaber d'chsir midva sheker tirchak v'naki v'tzadik al-tara kilo ha'zik rosh. Meaning, Zot the Yireim, that the Isser to lie is only if it is a lie that will bring forth something that's bad for people. No? If I lie, and because I lie, I hurt you, then there's an Isser of lying. But if I tell what we call a white lie, so for the Yireim, that's not a problem. And then the Yireim says, I, the Gemara in Ksubis, right, this is like everyone's favorite Gemara in Ksubis. Keitzer Merkel of Ne'akala. So Beis Shammai says that you say Kala Kamo Shehi. Beis Hillel says Kala Nova Chasuda. So Beis Shammai then refers to Beis Hillel. He says, Omer Beis Shammai, the Debrecha, Beis Shammai, so Chigeris Osuma, Heich Yomar, Kala Nova Chasuda, Vatora Omra, Midva Sheker Tirchak. Frek to be Yireim, I'm telling you that the only answer to lie is when it's a lie that hurts somebody. But if it's a lie that does not hurt somebody, there's no Isser. Aye, but the Gemara in Ksubis says that according that Beis Shammai asks on Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel, you're supposed to say, you say that you dance and you recite Kala Nova Chasuda, that she is, usually everyone focuses on the Na side, that like Kala Na, right? Really, Chasuda, according to the Torah, is like much more important. Right? A person who has tremendous chesed, a wonderful person, a person with only good attributes, right. That's what you say according to Beis Hillel. So Beis Shammai asks, well, what do you mean? Midva Sheker Tirchak? You're not allowed to lie. So the Yireim asks, one second, well, what's the problem? If I'm telling you that lying is only a problem when it hurts somebody, in that case, how do you hurt the person? There's no damage. So enter the Yireim, he says, Hahi yesh bo ngol adriyas, kidibe Beis Shammai, shenira kigone das habal. The Yireim says, no, it's really bad for people because you're deceiving the husband. Now, I totally don't get this. Right? In other words, in the context of the Gemara, what you have is there's some husband who apparently has such low self-esteem that he's not sure if the young woman he's marrying is appealing to him in any sort of way. And you know what? If you dance and you say, Kala Nova Chasuda, then he's going to say, wow, okay, got it. But if you don't, so it's really hard to get our mind bent around this. But the Yireim, nonetheless, however we understand the Yireim, what the Yireim is saying is that there's no Isser to lie unless you hurt somebody. A white lie is permitted. I, the Gemara in Ksubis. The Yireim says, oh, what that Gemara in Ksubis really means is that you're hurting someone. Somehow it's going to be das habrios. Someone will have to explain this to me. I don't understand it, but let's just leave it like that. Now, The Rambam assumes that there is no real issur to tell a white lie. However, the Haredim was one of those who was exiled during the Spanish Inquisition, no? The Haredim writes, Mitzvah Saseh with Abraham is a few mil of the Alma, the Lakum Jura de Mulona. Shanema Mitzvah Shakatir Hakmashma, Athil Lekarak, Dibor Alma. The Haredim writes that even if it's just plain words, there's a mitzvah to tell the truth. Now, if I'm precise, I realize that the Haredim might not be arguing with the Yireim completely. The Haredim is just saying that there's a mitzvah to tell the truth. That's not the same as saying it's us or it's a lie. But when you think about it, the space between an isser to lie and a mitzvah to tell the truth is not that much, no? Very often, we speak about a mitzvah and an isser like they're two sides of the same coin, no? The first mission of Brachos, the harchik adam min ha'aveira. We want to keep people far away from an aveira, therefore you have to say kriya shema by chatzos, right? What aveira is there going to be? I'm not going to do a mitzvah, no? I'm not going to say shema on time. What's the aveira? Or I'm not going to say Shema at all. So we want to make sure you say Shema. But that's not doing a mitzvah. The tenet is that very often we see that not doing a mitzvah is called an Aveira, no? Isn't that, I think it's fairly obvious. But whatever it is, the Yireim and the Haredim seem to be disagreeing. The Yireim seems to say that there's no Isser to lie in general. And the Haredim is saying that, in general, you have to tell the truth, which probably means you're not allowed to lie. But in philosophy, I think, the Kant is of the opinion that lying is considered a capital offense, and it's better to die rather than to lie. There is one opinion in Subastaf Yuches, that the Isser to sign on the Shtar falsely is Yehari Ga'yavar. Now, usually we assume there's only three, Yisurim that Yehari Ga'yavar. But Ksubas Daf Yud Ches has one opinion that there's an Isser that's Yehari Ga'yavar to lie. But it's hard. It's hard to assume that's Yehari Ga'yavar. It's very difficult. Whether or not lying in general is a Isser seems to be a Machlokas HaRishonim. And this Machlokas HaRishonim seems to be two ways of understanding the position of Beis Hillel there in Ksubas. Beis Hillel says that I say Kalana V'chasuda. Let's say the young woman is not particularly a good person. Let's say this person never went on a chesed project her entire year in seminary. She never once did chesed. Right? They were thinking of kicking her out, but somehow it was like a miracle. People still do chesed in seminaries, or this is ancient history. Okay, I got it. Fine. Now, whatever it is, if you have someone who's just not a nice person, they still says, you say, Kalana v'chasuda. How are you allowed to do that? Isn't that a lie? So there are two possibilities. One possibility is that Beis Hillel assumes, like the Sefer Yireim, that there's no Isser to lie. Now, Beis Shammai felt somehow that this lie is going to hurt the person. But Beis Hillel is saying, come on, that's so far-fetched. Like, far-fetched, by the way, is one of those English words that sounds like Yiddish, in keeping score at home, right? But that sounds like so... It's nutty, but you're going to hurt the person. We can't even explain it. So Beis Hillel says, okay, you know what? The Isser to lie is only if you hurt someone. If you don't hurt someone, there's no Isser to lie. Maybe that's Beis Hillel's approach, like the Sefer Yireim. Alternatively, the Ritva here in Ksubis takes a slightly different approach. Comes along the Ritva in Ksubis. The Ritva writes, Yishabchena ve'enav, o yiganenu ve'enav, peyrush. Anyone want to take a stab at explaining this mitzvah?
So there's no Isser to lie when it comes to shalom.
Exactly.
Lying will keep the shalom.
You're really the mitzvah holds. Are you? Am I allowed to lie? Or I'm not allowed to lie.
Really,
I'm not allowed to lie, but I have a priority. Pardon the expression that trumps, right, the din of not lying, and that is called keeping shalom. It's usher to lie in general, but shalom is a higher value. Therefore, says the Ritva, in order to maintain shalom, you're allowed to lie. But ordinarily, lying is usher. Lying is usher. Now, if the Ritva is correct, that would sound more like the position of the Charedim rather than the position of the Yireid, no? What the Ritva is saying is that it's usur to lie in general. That would imply that the Charedim is right, that you're not allowed to lie. Now let's plug this in to a Gemara here in Bava Basra. Lying in the context of Shidduchim, is it permitted or not? So, if you'd ask me, I would say, of course, you're not allowed to lie, right? These cases come up all the time. If someone asks you information about a person, now, we'll talk about the Lashon Hara angle a little bit later, but someone asks you about a person, and you say, you know what, really fine person, wonderful person, never misses a class in Stern. Never misses a class. Wonderful. Okay, that's a complete lie. Everybody misses class half of the time, right? It's a complete lie. Are you allowed to do that? Alternatively, like the cases we said before, the Shadchan's apprentice, etc. So let's look at this Gemara in Bava Basra. Let's pick up from the second line. Basically, these Gemaras in Bava Basra are playing on Sukkim and Eov. Eov is this complicated figure, not exactly sure whether or not Eov existed, right? The Gemara discusses there. So the Gemara plays on the pasuk, Leiv almona arnivim. You see it in the second line of this Gemara. I will gladden the heart of the almona. Meaning, zok the Gemara, d'chol hecha d'heva almona, d'lo hevo nas filah. Whenever there was an almona, whenever there's a widow, that no one wanted to marry this widow, have a azul shadi shmei ilava, but have a asi nasvila. Whenever there's an almona, whenever there's a widow that no one wanted to marry, what this guy would do, what Eov would do, is he would throw his name on her. Now, what does it mean he'd throw his name on her? Look at Rashi. Rashi's two comments, two explanations. Explanation number one of Rashi is Omer Shehi Krovaso. He would say that she's his relative. Okay, so you have a woman, she's an almana, her husband died, and it's hard for her to get married. Eve would say, you know what? She's my cousin. Right? How's she my cousin? Oh, we're related through Avram Avinu. Right? Something like that, right? My cousin. We have the same great-great-grandfather. Is it true? Was this woman, was this almana really Eo's cousin? Probably not. But Eo decides that he's going to gladden the hearts of the almana. So he says she's his relative. Second explanation of Rashi. Oh, midarbevola hasiyena. He would speak to her in order to marry her. This one is even harder to understand. You have an almana, she has a hard time getting married. This widow has a hard time. Eo would walk over to her and he'd start like flirting. So people say, oh, wow, Eo's flirting with her, so presumably I want to marry her. And it's a little interesting. Both Perushim and Rashi are difficult. But the first Pshat in Rashi is quoted by Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss is one of the major posts in Eretz Yisrael today. He's actually now the posting, after the Tzitz Eliezer passed away, he became the posting of Shari Tzedek Hospital. He comes to the Five Towns every couple of weeks, no? He just spoke in Sharon last week or something. My former chavrusa in YU is now a rabbi out in Woodmere, so he always, like, whenever Rav Asher Weiss comes, he drives him around. Shai Shechter, Rav Shechter's son, he always drives Rav Asher around. He always asks Rav Asher all the shaylas. He's a major post, a very serious person. So Rav Asher has a tshuva. It's Simon Samach Zayin in volume 1 of the tshuvas. And it's titled, Imutu L'Shakir V'Shiduchim. Are you allowed to lie in Shiduchim? Pretty relevant. Rav Asher Weiss says, yes. Bava Basra Daf, what is it? Tezayin. Leiv Amona Arden. You're allowed to lie in Shiduchim. Now, it's not, to me, again, Rav Asher is a huge Talmud Chacham, but to me it just seems a little strange that we would say you're allowed to lie. Now, I should point out, Rav Asher is not saying you're allowed to lie completely. He says that you're allowed to tell the type of lie that you know the people wouldn't care about. meaning. Sometimes, I'll give you an example. When I was dating, like many, many years ago, I grew up in the Five Towns. So when I was dating, I had a policy which my mother was really upset about. I would not go out with any girls from the Five Towns. Pashita. Why not? Because I grew up in the Five Towns. I'm not going out with anyone from the Five Towns. Nothing to talk about. End of conversation. Now, let's say someone would say, oh, yeah, she's not from the Five Towns. And it would be a lie. So, Sister Bashoris, that type of lie is permitted. Because if it's an arbitrary type of thing, that a person is just setting a standard, which a person doesn't really care about. How they know they don't care about? Because, come on. If they would go and get engaged, right, it would be, oh, it's so, you know, sometimes, you know, you show up at a bar and someone's engaged, it's like, oh, so cute, like opposites attract, they're so different, right? Like, usually, if you would hear about these people going out 3 weeks before, you'd say, oh my gosh, like, him and her, they're like, totally different, like, this would never happen on the normal planet. But, I guess the year 2016, the United States is not a normal planet, that's a different conversation. But the fact is, says Reb Usher, you're allowed to tell the type of lie if it's the type of lie that no one really would care about one way or another. Eov is saying, she's my relative. So people are going to say, oh, I want to marry her. Why? Because she's Eov's cousin. Does it matter if you're so-and-so's cousin or not? Does that have any impact on the type of person you are? Does that have any impact on the type of spouse that you'll be? Does it have any impact on anything? No. So that type of lie is permitted. That's what Reb Usher says. Now, I have to admit, even though Reb Usher Weiss is saying this, I'm not sold. I'm not sold on it because it seems to me that we should never lie. And I'd like to prove my point slightly from a Rambam here in Hilchos Matnas Aniyah. The Rambam talks about how to give tzedakah. And the Rambam has this whole pecking order about priorities in giving tzedakah, proper ways of giving tzedakah, less proper ways of giving tzedakah. Zok the Rambam, hanosin tzedakah la'ani b'sever panem ra'os u'panem kavushas b'karka, afil nosin lo elef zehuvim avad zehusa v'hifsida. And the Rambam says if I give tzedakah to a person with like a frown, right, and it's clear that you don't want to give the tzedakah, says the Rambam, you know what? You don't get any zechus at all. You don't get any mitzvah. Rather, you should give tzedakah, b'sever panim yafos, b'simcha, umis oni nima tzarasov, shenem ramol uchisi u'kshayom, over nafshi la'evyon. But the Rambam says, I should give tzedakah with a smile, I should feel bad, I should empathize with the tzar that the ani is going through, etc. Then the Rambam concludes, umidavar lo divrei tachanunim v'nichumin, the Rambam concludes, and I should speak to the Ani in a conciliatory way. Divrei tachanunim v'nichumim, comfort the Ani. Shenemar, the pasuk, same pasuk from Eov. Leiv amana arnin. Now we don't know the makor of the Rambam, where the Rambam saw. Rambam very rarely makes things up. No, if the Rambam makes something up, he'll tell me Yira Elohim. Rambam will say, I got it from someone. Yirali means the Rambam would say that it's my own idea. Over here, the Rambam doesn't say it's his own idea. There's some source in Chazal that uses the same pasuk Leiv Amana Arnin, not in the context of lying, but in the context of gladdening the heart of someone in terms of gift tzedakah, like, you know, gift tzedakah, like it's a mitzvah. And people sometimes feel that, like, I'm giving tzedakah and I feel bad because I'm part of my money. You have to realize it's a mitzvah that we're doing. It's a beautiful thing. Be happy about it. Now, if the Rambam is using Leiv Amana Arnin in that way, that means the Rambam is not using Leiv Amana Arnin in the context of lying. And you get the impression that for the Rambam, you are not supposed to lie ever. Now, if we'd be giving a shiur that would last 2 hours instead of 1 hour, we'd focus on the Rambam's position of lying in general. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos writes that the approach of Talmidei Chachamim is not to lie. You get an impression from the Rambam that not lying is not something that's an absolute requirement for everybody, but for people who are elevated people, people who are striving for something more, they should not lie. Nonetheless, the Rambam still does not say that Leih Amana Arnin means I'm allowed to lie to help the shidduch of this Amana. You get the impression from the Rambam that lying should never be done. Even though lying is something that Alufnim Mishuras Hadin almost, still, the Rambam says don't do it. In Hilchos Avelos, the Shulchan Aruch quotes that when you give a hesped for someone, so what you do is you are allowed to exaggerate a little bit. The Taz asks Akasha, he says exaggerating a little bit, that's also a lie. Right? It's the next two sources I have here on the sheet. The Taz says, that's also a lie. So therefore the Taz concludes, you know what, exaggerating a little bit in a hesped is only permitted because if someone did 10 mitzvahs in his lifetime, in her lifetime, the assumption is that the person, had they had the opportunity, they would have done 11 mitzvahs or 12 mitzvahs. So that's not really a lie. It's something that just they didn't have the opportunity to do. But a real lie, you get the impression you shouldn't do. So if you'd ask me, are you allowed to lie for shidduchim? I would say absolutely not. No? Some poskim say that only significant lies are forbidden. And in terms of the age of a person, so the differences between whether someone is over 40 or under 40, that you're not allowed to lie. Anything else, you are allowed to lie. It seems to me that's not correct. It seems to me that you should never lie. It's just, by the way, it's like a bad way to start off a relationship for life, no? If you start off with a lie, I imagine I'd feel very guilty about this. Like, you want to be honest. You want to have an honest relationship. It seems to me that it's a really bad idea. So that's the first issue in terms of what. Next. Sometimes the question comes up, do I have to give complete information? Let's say I get a call. By the way, the issues now are focused mostly on people who know someone really well. If you don't know someone well at all, like oftentimes I get a call about someone, it's like, yeah, I know the name, okay, great, but it doesn't mean anything. If you want real information about a person, you get it from roommates, you get it from people who really know that person very well. And sometimes people feel, like, let's say my roommate is popping pills every night, a lot of them. Right? Let's say that happens. So you say, I don't want to like hurt the person's chances. Right? So they call me and ask about the roommate, and they'll say, like, is there anything I should know? I say, no, nothing, fine person. Right? Or they'll just say, kind of start talking about politics or something else. Is that permitted? Am I allowed to hide information that I know about someone when I'm asked directly? So I would say that potentially there's an issur of lifnei iver in this case. Now, usually lifnei iver means avodah zarah d'avod. Lifnei iver means that I'm not allowed to provide you with an issur. It says, "Potential yoshit adam by kos yayim l'nozia iver menachayel ben noach shenemar lifnei iver l'sitem b'shal." I can't give you an opportunity to do an aveira. That's the classic with Nikki Berry. But the Gemara in Moed Katan on Dav Hey, I actually have a PS program that I oversee for high schools across the country for boys and girls. This year they're going Moed Katan. They just took the test on Dav Hey. I don't remember if we asked them to run this enough or not, but what can we do? The fact is, the Gemara Moed Katan discusses that there's something called Siyum Tavaris. Siyum Tavaris means that you mark off graves so that people should not become tummy. If you've ever been to Tzfat, you notice that like half of the city is blue? Did you notice this? Right. Why is the city blue? It's not that they're so Zionistic. Right? The reason why half of the city of Tzfat is blue is that there's some tradition that all the holy places, and they know the holy places because the Arizal like had dreams about what's a holy place. All the graves, by the way, where they say that so-and-so is buried here, right, we don't know these from any old sources. We know these from the Mikvolim in Tzfat, or the Gurei Ha'ari, who basically identified the holy places based on their visions, etc. So the blue, in fact, is really tzion kavaris. The blue is there really to identify that this is a grave, and therefore you shouldn't become tummy. So the Gemara wants to know, Amr of Shimon Bukhazi, this is Moed Kut and Daf Hei, Remez with tzion kavaris min ha-Torah min ha-Hin, how do you have a hint for tzion kavaris from the Torah? By the way, this is already a complicated expression, Remez min ha-Torah, no? Remez sounds like a Sderabonim, min ha-Torah sounds like a Sderaisa. The Maritzvius on the first daf of Tainus has a brief essay about this. The Ramban in the Sharasha. The Ramban already was bothered by this question, what the word remez means. So Rav Shimon asks, Rav Shimon Paz asks, how do you know that you have to mark off the graves? Talmud Lomar, he quotes a pasuk of Ra'a Etzem Adam Uvon Esot Tzion, the Tzion, etc. Then the Gemara has other psukim, possibly for the source of Tzion Kavaris. And then Abaya Amar Mehapa. Abaya, this is four lines before the end of this source. Abaya says that the source for Tzion Kavaris is Lifnei Iver Ositein Mechshol. Now let's think about this for a second. Lifnei Iver means I should not give you something that you will use to sin. But over here, what am I doing? Am I giving you anything? I'm being passive, correct? I'm not marking the graves. So some Kohen might come by, and that Kohen might say, might just say, become tummy. The coin is just going to become tummy in this area. And the Gemara says, that's with the Iver Osite Meshel. If I do not mark off the grave, what that would seem to imply is that I can violate with the Iver passively. Right? It's not only Lifnei Iver, right? Rashi al-Hatayra writes that there's Lifnei Iver from Mesi Eitzah She'ena Hogenes. Now, if I give a person bad advice, that's Lifnei Iver. I tell you, oh, there's this guy Madoff. You know, I heard Madoff, he's worth investing in. Right? I give bad advice. Right? Actually, I'm going to assume that's not Lifnei Iver. Something that everyone should know. The assumption is you have to be an idiot to do it, correct? But one time I worked in the OU, and I remember someone called up, like the person like really angry, and the person said, you know, you guys, you're not marking products that say OUD properly, and if something is milk, you have to mark it off. I was like, okay, got it. Then what was the product? Milk. Idiot. Like, hello. I have a hamburger, and then I see the milk, and it only says OU. Oh, yeah, only OU. That's like, how come you have a tomorrow? Like, you have to use Seicha. Now, the fact is, this Gemara seems to say, I heard this idea from Reb Feivel Cohen once. Reb Feivel is like a major poseg. He wrote the Badei HaShulchan in Yeridea, and now he's opposing the lake, what he used to be in Brooklyn. I heard from Reb Feivel that Reb Feivel pointed out that you see from this Gemara that you can violate Lifnei Iver passively. If I don't mark off the kefir, if I don't point out that this is a place not to go, that's Lifnei Iver. Similarly, if I don't give you the information that you're asking for, you say, do you know about so-and-so? I'm like, yeah, good person. Or I say, whatever, fine, whatever, nothing, you know, use the word whatever 15 times in like one sentence. So if you don't say anything when they are asking, that might be Lifnei Iver. That would seem to be what emerges from this Gemara. Now, there are ways to reject this. Although Tosfos assumes that all the answers in this Gemara are accepted in terms of the Gemara, it's like five approaches about how we know Tzion Kavaris. Tosfos assumes that they're all accepted. The Maharsha here in the Chiddushei Agadas assumes that they might not all be accepted. Perhaps there is a machlokas, perhaps there's a problem with it. And if you read the Maharsha carefully, what the Maharsha is saying is that the problem with the explanation of Lifnei Iver is who says there's Lifnei Iver passively. But nonetheless, I think, and the Steich Demet has some essays about this, the assumption is that there can be Lifnei Iver if you're passive. So if you're asked a question directly, don't take the fifth if you know the answer. Now, sometimes it can be complicated, you know? Because you don't want information to get back to your roommate that you said that your roommate is popping pills all night. Or that I'm not like so in tune with like bad types of things that people can do. But whatever it is, you don't want it to get back. So the Achronim say in certain situations, you know, what you should do is you should reveal just enough information that the person will be cautious. Just enough information that the person will decide to take pause and to look further. You don't have to necessarily say all of the really bad things that you know. It requires a certain degree of chokhmah, but to say nothing, to take the fifth, to plead like innocence, I think that's very wrong. That could potentially be the iser of lifnei iver al sitein nafsho. Okay, let's go on. In terms of page 3 on this source sheet, Lashon, we might not finish actually, but please consent. Lashon Hara and revealing information. So the Sefer Chassidim writes that if your children need to get married and they have a disease, and it's a type of disease that had someone so then you got one. The Sefer Hasidim says if the disease that they have is a type of disease that people would not want to marry you if they would know about it, so then you have to reveal it. So that they should not say it's Kedushay Tos. There is a halacha that is very seldom applied that we can invalidate a marriage without a get, if we know for certain that it was a Mekach Tos. Rav Moshe Feinstein has like a few shuvahs, like only 3 cases. Every time Rav Moshe did it, this became a big deal. If you read the Dat Torah blog, you'll see about a very famous case that's ongoing with this, that every other day they post about it. But Moshe says that if you know that the person can't function normally as a spouse, the person can't hold down a job, the person is incapable of having physical relations, something like that. So in those situations where Moshe says it can be a mental close, he can get out of the marriage. Says the Sefer Chassidim, in those cases, then you should tell people before, you should tell people in the dating situation. No? If it's the type of situation that would be a Mekach Tos, then you should tell. Now, this is basically saying, yeah, you have to reveal, but you only have to reveal the most extreme cases. The case now that we're talking about comes in 2 parts. One part is, if I am seeing someone, do I have to tell them about all of my flaws? By the way, I hope I'm not bursting any bubbles. Everyone has flaws. But do I have to tell them about all of my flaws? Right? All of the things that I did wrong in life, do I have to tell them or not? So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva over here, Chelek Dalet Siman Kuf Yud Ches, about a young woman who had znus. She had relations. And the question is, do you tell the person that you're going out with, by the way, you should know, I succumbed once, twice. The case over here is that this young woman apparently succumbed many times. So Rav Moshe writes in the tshuva, he says it's a really bad idea to tell this on the first date. Okay, got that. And the first date, it's not like, if you say that on the first date, you never get a second date, correct? But Rav Moshe says what you should do is you should wait until you're ready speaking about marriage with the fellow, and at that point you could say, you could reveal your secrets. That's what Rav Moshe writes. Now, Rav Moshe is probably not going, is not as limited as the Sefer Hasidim. The Sefer Hasidim is saying only something that would be a Mekach Tos. We paskin in Eben Ha'ezer that if someone gets married and the Ksuba says a Besulon, the Ksuba says she never had relations, and it turns out it wasn't true. So, effectively, the ksuba is not invalid. You don't have to do a new kedushin. Rav Moshe Weiss actually has a tshuva about this also, page Shin, in the same volume. Effectively, the marriage is still good. But Rav Moshe still feels that you should reveal it, no? But don't reveal it right at the beginning. Rav Nochem Rabinowitz is the Rosh Hashiva in Malei Adumim, no? No? He has a set of tshuvas called the Siach Nachum. He was actually a friend of my father's. I think I heard these stories. But
he was in elementary school.
He was in elementary school with Ann Schiffer. Right? Yes. So Rav Nachum Rabinowitz, who's now in his mid-80s, a very serious posek, Rosh Yeshiva Malei Adumim, in his tshuvas, he writes that you should never tell people about these types of avodas. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Teshuva that Averos Bein Adam L'Chavero, I am not supposed to tell people about. I'm not supposed to be mefarik the chayv Rambam. I'm not supposed to publicly speak about my Averos. Averos Bein Adam L'Makom, those Averos I do talk about. And the Rambam writes in the Mora that Znus is considered an Avera Shebein Adam L'Makom. Therefore, Rabbeinu says, if a person has relations, just don't tell. What's the big deal? Go on, don't tell ever, not a problem. So what we have over here is actually, I would say, Rabbeinu is coming out similar to the Sefer Chassidim. Sefer Chassidim would say that you never have to tell, because it's not the type of thing that would invalidate the marriage. Rabbi Moshe says you have to tell, but don't do it right away. And, okay, that seems to be the machlokas. Do you tell right away, or no one says you tell right away? Do you delay telling, or do you never tell? These issues come up all the time, right, in medical situations. Let's say someone has the breast cancer gene. No? Any bio majors here want to explain what this is to everyone else? Everyone knows. Okay, got it. So someone has the breast cancer gene. So is that something that you tell about when you're dating? Well, there's a huge literature about this. In the Journal of Tefumen in volume 25, there was a back and forth between a Dr. Yor Katan and somebody else. I have it in my pamphlet. I just forgot who it is. You have to reveal these information. Some folks can say that it depends on the likelihood of developing the breast cancer. If it's less than 10%, just like by Yisurim, when something is not 10%, if it's not a Miyat HaMatzah, you don't have to tell. I don't have to check, right? I don't have to check everything for bugs, no? When I eat an apple, I don't check it for bugs, correct? Because less than 10% chance of having a bug in my apple. If I eat low-quality lettuce, I have to check it for bugs, because there's a 10% chance that there's going to be some aphids or thrips or other stuff in that lettuce. Similarly, some assume, with like revealing information, that it depends on whether there's a 10% chance or not. Others say that they have a proof from a Gemara that you never have to reveal information. Let's learn this Gemara and Yevamos this together. This will be the last thing that we do. We won't really get into so much Lashon Hara, but I guess that's good, because Lashon Hara is technically good. So the Gemara has a discussion here in Yevamos Mem Hei about Akum Be'eved HaBobas Yisrael with a lot of names or a lot of pressure. Let's say a non-Jew has relations with a Jewish woman. Is the baby considered Jewish? Vlad Kosher? Or do we assume that the Vlad Mamzer, that the baby is a Mamzer? So, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdini says that Vlad Mamzer. Rabbi Acha Sar Habira, Rabbi Tanchum Bar Yerubiya, Horu Kanu Shavu Yasu, the Asame Arimon, the Tiberia, they redeem these captive women. And there is one woman, Heba Tada, the Avram Ehofer Kofovim, one of them was pregnant from a non-Jew. Also, with Tamei Dereb Ami, Amalahu, Rabbi Yochum, Rabbi Lozer, saying the Akamem Rabbi Basis, Avlan Namzer. So Rabbi Yosef says, Rabbi Mushav Gavri, why are you calling so many people? All these people say that the Avlan Namzer, but Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and Bar Kapara, right? And others say, take away Bar Kapara, and put Mizik Ding Darab, they'll say that the Avlan is kosher. So why are you telling the Avlan's Namzer? Then the Gemara continues, Avram Masna, Moribon, and Tehra. The Gemara says, right, top line, second line on the fourth sheet, when they come to Rabbi Yehuda, he says, Zil itmer ol nosev bas mina. Tells this young woman, the product of the Akum Haba Bas Yisrael, Zil itmer, go and hide yourself, or marry someone like you, or marry another potential mamzer. Now, what's going on in this Gemara? Everyone asks, Zil Itmar, go hide yourself. Hide yourself means go away to a different country, no one's going to know you, and then get married. But one second, maybe I'm a mamzer. And if I'm a mamzer, I'm not supposed to marry. How am I allowed to just hide this relevant information? No? So some say, well, you see from this Gemara, that you don't have to reveal all information. The fact that I can say, Zil Itmar, go hide, go to a place where no one knows you, and back out, and don't tell anyone that you're the product of, again, we task him, Akavera, Babasis, Havlad Kosher, but there's an opinion, Havlad Mamzer. And even according to that opinion, the Gemara says, Zil Nosit, Zil Itmar, go hide yourself. How can you hide yourself? Apparently, maybe you don't have to reveal information. Many, many discussions. Rabbi Willick has an essay in the Kolel Elyon Torah Journal from 4 years ago where he tries to flesh this issue out. It seems that when all is said and done, if the information will eventually come out, you have to say. But if the information won't ever come out, potentially, so then there might not be a chiyuv to say, unless it's a type of information that were your spouse to know, your spouse would never want to marry you. Now, how you know what that is very difficult. And when we talk about various diseases or various conditions that people could have, these are serious questions in terms of what you reveal. But no matter what, if you reveal something, don't do it at the very beginning of dating, no? If you have some condition, some secret, you're popping pills, you have some whatever it is, don't reveal on the first date. Rav Moshe says only reveal it when the person's already, when the other party is speaking to you about marriage. When the guy's already talking marriage, then you reveal. It seems to me that in our world, we should not do that. That there's some time in between, like the beginning of dating and when they're talking marriage, and that's the appropriate time to reveal. I think people would get very upset if, like, when you're already hiring, you know, the band and the flowers for the wedding, if then you say, oh, by the way, you should know I have the breast cancer gene. A little too late. Reveal it earlier. When? It depends on your community and the dating styles in your community, right? The Satmarov once gave a drasha where he spoke about Patsdi v'chayim in the Ibnok space. He says, I'm very upset with these Ibnok space. That's what the Torah says, right? Mokeach, Yaakov, Isham, those space, Ha'el, Olam, Lechayim, right? That's this Tarsha. The Satmarov said, Ibnok space means the girls who go out 8 times. Satmarov was very upset about that because it's terrible. You're going out 8 times, and so much you have to go out fewer than 8 times. Rav Bick, who was a posek in Brooklyn, he says the Satmarov is making a big mistake because he's Masadr Kedushin, I'm Masadr Gittin in town, he said. And I can tell you that in those days, you should go out way more than 8 times. I think in our communities, it's pretty standard to go out way more than 8 times, no? If you go out 8 times, that's like, oh my gosh, that's like, I have one sister-in-law who went out 8 times, but she's a late one, yeah, it's different. Now, the fact is, I think it's reasonable to reveal this type of information, to hide any major thing. You don't have to reveal everything. Spouses that are allowed to have little secrets, that the other person doesn't know about you. You don't have to be a complete open book, and everything that you did in fourth grade, you don't have to say. But major things, you have to say. Don't say it right at the beginning. Don't say it right at the end. Say it at some point in the middle. Obviously, these are very big topics. I could probably go on for 3 or 4 more hours on it. But this is here just to introduce you to this topic. And I thank you for listening. If anyone has questions, I'm happy to take them also.
Thank you.